Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
You know, last week we got so busy covering so many different topics in the news, and of course I've been kind of crisscrossing the state over the past couple of weeks as well, and so I missed it when we had Secretary of Education Linda McMahon here in Montana as part of her 50-state tour. Yeah, she did a big event alongside Governor Greg Gianforte and the president of Montana State University in Bozeman as well, but I did get a chance to catch up with Savannah Newhouse, who is a senior staffer. She is the press secretary for Secretary of Education Linda McMahon. And when I was talking with her earlier this week, I was trying to remember the quote, because I have been referencing this quote a lot. In fact, earlier this year when I got to speak at the MACRS convention, the Montana Association of County Road Supervisors, I had shared this quote. And I was trying to remember. I said, what was it? Was it something like 50 cents on the dollar that we spend supposedly on education at the federal level here in the United States of America doesn't even go to education? And thankfully, at least I remembered it right. Here you go. This is what Savannah Newhouse told me as I got a chance to catch up with her earlier in the week. Let me see if I've got it queued up in the right spot here.
I believe the secretary said something.
Playing in the background. All right, now I can roll it for you. Here we go.
Right. I believe the secretary said something like 47 cents out of every dollar gets spent on regulatory compliance when it comes to local education. And that's just simply unacceptable, you know? I mean, that's part of the reason why President Trump is returning education to the states. The other reason, you know, over the last 45 years, the Department of Education has spent nearly $3 trillion and has produced virtually no improvement in student and reading mathematics scores. You know, just take a look at our nation's report card results that came out earlier this year. 7 out of 10 fourth and eighth grade students are not proficient in reading. And this past month, we learned that 78% of high school seniors are not proficient in math, and roughly two-thirds are not proficient in reading. And that's just simply unacceptable to the secretary and President Trump. What we're doing in education is simply not working.
Yeah, and that's a good tee-in to our conversation here this morning. We've got a couple of great guests that are going to join us coming up here right after the break, talking about our nation's report card when it comes to our public schools in particular. Yeah, I saw a piece here by Robert Enlow, who is the president and CEO at EdChoice. America's education crisis pushes parents to look beyond public schools, and talking about these failing grades that we're seeing in our public schools. And one thing stands out as well here is that it's not a money problem. In fact, sometimes it's a mo money, mo problems problem. Minnesota, for example, a lot more money on public schools. So why are they getting their butts kicked by Mississippi, of all places? We're going to talk about that and more right after this, right here on Montana Talks.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we got a couple of great guests with us here this morning in the first half of the show, and then we'll open up the phone lines for you in the second half of the program if you got some other topics you want to get to here. James Easton is with the Montana Chamber Foundation, grew up in Laurel, Montana, but has a 17-year record working in schools, special education, and a business teacher. I think his last assignment was at Billings Senior High School. Plus, we've got Catherine Conan with the Gianforte Family Foundation on with us right now. Catherine, let's start with you. First off, thanks for being with us. I know that the topic of education is one of the big pillars for the Gianforte Family Foundation. Give us your view, your read. What did we learn with this report card for our nation's schools from your perspective?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks, Aaron. Good to be here. Thanks for having me. So I think that the big thing to focus on here is yes, there's this report card that's out, and like you pointed out, Montana is actually outperforming several of the other states. But I also think it's good to see the big picture of there's some really, really excellent opportunities here in Montana related to education. I think science was one of the categories that it talked about on the report card that students are struggling in, at least with their proficiency. And there's some really good tech programs out there right now, both in school and then additional other nonprofits that are working outside of school to help kids and then even post-secondary young adults enter into those fields related to science and technology. So I guess the big thing that I would take away is you've got, you just have a lot of opportunities. Montana is doing a lot of things really well, and we at the foundation are excited to support a lot of the things. And I can go into some of them more specifically if you'd like.
Yeah. So first, just starting with the National School Report Card, this piece at FoxNews.com by Robert Enloe says this: nearly half of high school seniors scored below basic in math and reading. Compared to 2019, the last time the test was administered, the results are abysmal. And so we were already seeing kind of a bad trend in our nation's schools before COVID-19. And then, you know, all of the absurd lockdowns and mandates and things that happened, especially in public schools during COVID-19, it was like, you know, on steroids, bad news for our nation's schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did see that too. But I also, I just think that there's some really good opportunities. So first of all, I think that there's this push, right, that every student has to excel in high school and then go on to college. And I don't think that that's always the right fit for students. So I can tell you some more about some of the opportunities we have for post-secondary opportunities. There's some trade scholarships that we support for kids who want to go into trade schools at the two-year colleges around the state. I think that what people are seeing from some of these results from report cards is it's not always the best fit, you know, to expect that you're gonna be proficient in all these subjects and then go on to a four-year college and pursue that. So what are some other things you could do? You could pursue a trade scholarship or a trades degree through the scholarships that we have. We actually give away about $500,000 every year in scholarships for students who want to go on to a trades or technical degree versus a four-year college. And those are students who wouldn't necessarily have flourished in the public schools, who wouldn't be necessarily proficient in all of those report cards that they're having, but still have these meaningful work that they can pursue and these valuable careers in their communities through these scholarships.
Yeah, it seems like maybe one of the reasons why Montana is doing better than some of these other states is, you know, we've increasingly adopted more school choice. And so many people think of school choice as just being a public school versus a private school thing. But in reality, like, there's even school choice within the public schools. And so how is that playing a role in increasing opportunities and increasing, you know, choices, not just public versus private, but even within the public schools? How do you think that's helping Montana outperform some of these other states?
Yeah. Well, you're giving the local schools more flexibility, right, to do what the best fit is for their community and what those families are wanting and looking for in the school so they can respond to those needs. And, you know, you've got, I think there's some charter schools in Kalispell, for example, that are doing really excellent work when it comes to job preparation for kids. That's just one example of how school choice has kind of raised all the ships. Through the opportunities. And then, of course, you've got the tax credit as well, right, where people can contribute to both private and public school services and then get the credit for that.
Well, I know last week when Education Secretary Linda McMahon was in Montana and had meetings with, of course, Governor Greg Gianforte, and, of course, the Gianforte Family Foundation is, doing some incredible work, on top of whatever the governor is doing at the state level as well. But he was highlighting, you know, some of the programs in the public schools in Kalispell, for example, and really increasing opportunities in the trades education and providing, you know, providing those career opportunities right now instead of after, say, a four-year liberal arts degree.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. I think work-based learning is a really important thing that Montana's implementing and they're doing really well. And James can speak, too, about that with the work that he does with Empowered. But we've been supporting Empowered for, gosh, James, maybe 7 or 8 years, I want to say. And that brings in this kind of the fact that education isn't just sitting through these subjects in classes all day, right? It's getting out there and it's actually experiencing things, learning from people who have already done this, walked this path. Here's how you run this business or here's how you manufacture this product.
Yeah, learning from the people who've actually done it, right? Well, hold that thought. We're going to bring James Easton into the conversation here with the Montana Chamber Foundation right after this quick break right here on Montana Talks. Stand by. Did you?
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
There were a couple of other things that I talked about with Savannah Newhouse from the U.S. Department of Education, a top staffer with Education Secretary Linda McMahon, who was just here in Montana last week. One of them was, you know, addressing all of the fake news that you see out there, these phony fear campaigns that come out of, you know, from some of the public employee unions, that come from, you know, the liberal media. And as President Trump has been working to get more of this money back to the states and into the hands of the states so that it can actually get to the classrooms, get to the kids, get to the teachers, the fake news media is out there pretending that somehow important educational programs are going to be cut, when in reality, giving this money back to the states is actually going to get more money into the classrooms and where the money truly needs to be. We talked about that. The other thing I talked about was there were actually these billboards that were put up in Minnesota, I think it was. The Unleash Prosperity Hotline pointed this out, where basically they were mocking Minnesota, a state that spends way more money on public schools than Mississippi does, and yet Mississippi had better numbers, had better scores in education than Minnesota did. So anyway, maybe I'll play another clip or two from Savannah Newhouse with the Department of Education, but let's jump into it here with James Easton, 17 years as a school teacher, special education, and in business, now with the Montana Chamber Foundation. James, what's the good and the bad? I'll leave out the ugly, but what are you seeing out there, especially as somebody who's got a background in education?
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. Thanks for having me on. And, and thanks, Catherine, for having me jump on with her, too. But, I think the good, seeing where we're at is, being in education, I think Montana's in a really cool spot because, you know, when I was in high school and with that, you know, education was really pointed towards getting that transcript that's going to get you into college and to roll, right? And statistically, the amount of percentages that's been since we were in school and beyond, you know, it's way less than 50% that even go to college. And then that number even goes way down who graduate from college. And I think schools are starting to look at programming that's 100% of the kids, right? And I think that's private, you know, I think that's public, charter schools, homeschools, that, you know, let's find that transcript that's going to go. And I think Montana's a little ahead of the curve of trying to say, hey, well, let's get all these kids ready. It doesn't have to just be for a college application, which I think is pretty cool. You know, bad, you know, I think, you know, like you said, with the scores, I mean, and you look at technology, I mean, we weren't able to even do, phone interviews, you know, you had people calling in, and we're on a Teams call right now to do a radio interview. And when COVID hit, you know, nobody was prepared. And I do see that, like, there was such a learning gap for educators across all boards, to switch it up. And I think we're finally kind of coming out of that, where virtual education, I think it really helps within the rural schools in Montana, that they can get some of those opportunities that weren't even available, you know, prior to everybody getting pushed to kind of go online a little bit more.
Yeah, and talk specifically about what the Montana Chamber Foundation has been doing now for quite some time, as I understand it. Because coming up next month, I'll be back at the Montana Equipment Dealers Association, their annual meeting, and we've been talking a lot about trades education. And I love this concept that Catherine Conan from the Gianforte Family Foundation already kind of talked about a little bit, which is like, hey, we've got people who've done this in the real world. They've got, you know, dirt under their fingernails. They've actually built things. They've actually done this in the private sector. Let's get those people in the classroom. Let's, and one of the things we've talked about at the equipment dealers convention is like, hey, and you know, maybe you have a shop class at your school, maybe you don't, but there is a shop right down the road. You can get those kids into the shop down the road for your shop class. And it sounds like that's kind of similar to what you've been doing with the Montana Chamber Foundation.
Yeah, I think a little bit, and then also being a part of the team of the, you know, the Montana Work-Based Learning Collaborative, both Catherine and I are a part of, is addressing, you know, a big portion of that also. But the Empowered program, you know, I started using it about the time Montana had that first little push. I was one of the first probably 20 teachers in Montana to do it. But really the whole idea was, you know, creating these experiences, and it can be in any classroom, but these activities aren't really right or wrong. It's do it. It's learn by trying. You might fail. Let's talk about it. And, they just increased all their activities. And it's kind of just, I love it because it's kind of layering in on education to, hey, you've got that chapter quiz kind of mentality, but let's layer on some of these activities that make it real and you can apply it and kind of turn back and say, hey, where's this going to be outside? Where's it going to go? And then on the big side, you know, we also, one of the big things is a market day. Empowered is able to help fund these little micro loans for, we had about 50, we had 16 educators across Montana and do it, but these kids get to start their own businesses, and I loved it. I did it in my classroom. These kids would get money, a little loan, and if they paid it back, they got to keep all the money. And it was, so this high school class where these kids were having to do everything on their own, kind of start their own business, learn if they're good at selling or making or do whatever, and kind of a low scale, risk free type of thing, but really learning some of those entrepreneurial skills and workforce skills. And again, took a high school class, got a high school credit, and you might have put $400 in your pocket. Like, you know, it made it a little bit more real. And so pushing a lot of these activities, that's kind of a little piece of what we're doing. I do a lot with the equipment dealers. I'm actually in Glendive right now.
Oh, nice.
We just put on a cultivating careers. So we had sixth graders through 12th graders from Richie, you know, Terry, Glendive, Savage, some other surrounding schools, about 450 kids that were doing experiences with over 40 business partners up at Dawson Community College yesterday, where these kids are starting to learn and make relationships with the businesses. So they kind of start to realize that there are careers that they don't think about way before they even think about graduating.
That's awesome. Well, while you're in Glendive, go say hello to the Sturlogsons for us there at the radio stations. That's great. So what are some of these businesses that some of these kids have started up and launched businesses while still in school? I saw one of the, I think there was a company called Yellowstone Leather, I think, was a company that came out of one of these programs.
Yeah. I mean, it's across the board. Some of these kids are, you know, they don't know what they're doing, so they might just make hot cocoa. But, you know, one of my first years that I did it with this kid, it was called Lucky Shoes Welding. He was at the Career Center in Billings. He was kind of starting to weld, wanted to be a mechanic. He was like, oh, I'm going to just make these like coat hooks out of horseshoes, just weld them together. Right. And, by the end of this whole thing, people were asking him to make like, and he was doing his neighbor's like, door rails and porch rails, welding them together. And, you know, that was one of those big stories. We've got kids across the state that, you know, different schools are doing things. But, yeah, the leather working. We've got kids doing baked goods. They're getting certified with, like, ServSafe, you know, handling. They're just kind of thinking through the programs. But Billings, we do a really big one. You know, it is downtown during the first Friday, kind of the art walk, holiday stroll that in December. And usually we have about, I don't know, around 100 kids, maybe 70 student businesses selling anything from candles, wood gear, like woodworking to, you know, just cookies and little things, but it's given these kids these opportunities to, you know, like see what it really takes.
What
and,
you
know,
can do,
do
yeah.
what parts.
Spark that entrepreneurial fever. Yeah, you mentioned the kid making stuff out of horseshoes. I've got a cousin who's a rancher south of Fallon, and he made just this coolest cross out of horseshoes that we've got at our house. It's just incredible. And that's James Easton with the Montana Chamber Foundation. Back to Catherine Conan with the Gianforte Family Foundation. We're seeing a lot of new innovative schools pop up all across Montana. I was just in Lake County in Ronan this past Sunday, and they were helping to raise money for a Christian academy there. I just actually recorded a podcast with a friend in Whitefish yesterday. His kids go to the Christian Academy in Whitefish. He's very impressed with that organization. What are you seeing, both public and private school innovation out there, Catherine?
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. Well, I think that the one thing that COVID has taught parents is that they maybe have a bigger role to play in their kids' education than they originally expected. I mean, it taught me that. Suddenly I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Now I'm the one home with all the kids, you know, keeping them up with their schoolwork. So I guess what that did is maybe it kind of reminds us that parents know best for their kids. And so they, when they have the opportunity and the barriers are removed, that they can send their kids to the school that works best, and whatever that school looks like, the kids tend to thrive. So when that's really allowed some of the independent schools that we know of to see their enrollment grow, because parents have found that this is, in this particular situation with this child, this is a better fit for them or for their family. And like you said, I think that it's inspired some really exciting opportunities in the public schools as well. So we've, like, for example, we fund robotics clubs at public schools, and those are for kids starting in fourth grade. So they learn about Legos and these Legos, and they build robotics at the younger level. And then as they get older, they're actually manufacturing parts for their robotics and building them from scratch. So it's really cool, but it's this opportunity that it's not like it's right in the classroom. It's something that the kids opt into after school. So the parents are seeing it as, here's this opportunity now that we've seen that education doesn't always have to look like you're sitting in a classroom all the time, here's this other opportunity for kids to get involved in something that's going to pique their interest in a new field, that's going to encourage them in science and math, if that's what they're interested in. Some of these robotics clubs, the older ones, they're also doing like marketing and writing, and they're having to present their teams and their products.
And then the social aspect, you're getting kids out of their shell, you're getting them off of their phones or their devices, and actually working with each other and kind of a team-building opportunity at the same time as well. All right, well, we got to take another quick break here on Montana Talks. Coming up after this, we'll have the phone lines open for you. If you got something you want to talk about, 406-294-0970. Back right after this.
This is where Montana Talks Ag with Lane Nordlund.
During the month of August, the 24 major milk-producing U.S. states produced over 18 billion pounds, up 3.3% from 2024. Production per cow in these regions averaged 2,068 pounds for August, 28 pounds above last year. The number of milk cows in these regions was just over 9.08 million head, 172,000 more than last year, and 7,000 head above July 2025. U.S. egg production also totaled 8.9 billion eggs in August, 2% below 2024. Production included over 7.6 billion table eggs and 1.3 billion hatching eggs. As we look to cattle prices compared to last week, steers and heffers sold $5 to $10 lower. I haven't said that in a while. Going through the ring, they were about $5 to $10 lower as demand was moderate to good and moderate supply was seen. Buyers built loads as smaller packages are finding their way to the marketplace and taking a few pennies off per pound for those smaller lots. Across the north central region, including Montana, 600 to 700-pound steers this week were priced at $3.99 a pound, down from $4.10 the previous week. 7 to 8 weights priced at $3.76 a pound. I'm Lane North.
Montana Talks, where you get the mic. Call in now at 406-294-0970. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Yeah, Yeah, big thanks to Catherine Conan with the Gianforte Family Foundation and also James Easton with the Montana Chamber Foundation. Appreciate them joining us on the show. We do have the phone lines open for you now. If you got something you want to talk about, 406-294-0970, or you can message us on the Montana Talks app. A couple of resources I wanted to share with you real quick here as well, because I was chatting with Catherine and James during the break. You know, we kind of covered a whole range of topics. You know, Catherine was talking about robotics programs and how they're on the rise all across the state, in our schools all across Montana. James was talking about, you know, really these workforce programs while kids are still in school and how, you know, they can get college credits while they're working and while they're still in high school, for example, but then they come out of high school with skills ready to go to work on a job site, for example. Couple of websites for more information. They're both a part of the Montana Work-Based Learning Collaborative. You can find more on that website, WBLMT.org, and then you can also go to the Montana Chamber's website, montanachamber.com, and then pull up the Montana Chamber Foundation website to find out more about the work that they're doing with the Empowered program, etc. Okay, before we get into your phone calls, I want to play just a couple more highlights of my conversation with the press secretary for Education, Secretary Linda McMahon, who was in Montana just last week. In fact, did events along with Governor Greg Gianforte and MSU President Brock Tessman, and, of course, other K-12 educators in the room as well.
Let me start with why Secretary McMahon was in Montana for your listeners. The secretary is in the middle of a 50-state tour. She's going to go to all 50 states, hopefully in the next 6 months here. We've got a real job ahead of us. This is the Returning Education to the State tour, and it's really all about visiting classrooms, listening to local voices on the ground, and spotlighting the incredible work happening at the local level. And as you mentioned, the secretary had a great trip out west at the end of last week, and while she was in Montana, got to join Governor Gianforte in seeing a variety of different models. We toured a public elementary school in the morning, and then went on to an agricultural research and teaching farm, and then on to Montana State University. So each of those steps really showed her how implementing targeted programs, for instance, boosting literacy early on in childhood, we saw that at the elementary school, or expanding workforce initiatives, are really vital for student success.
Yeah, you know, here in Montana, our superintendent of public instruction, one of the things I've really appreciated of her is she doesn't fall for the fake news, for these phony fear campaigns that come out of the left-wing, you know, statewide teachers union organization. I've heard it over several years now working in you know, politics and media in Montana. You've got teachers on the left and teachers on the right who have said, look, we don't need, you know, all of these federal mandates, these unfunded federal mandates, and this is basically what your team is doing, what President Trump's team is doing, and our superintendent, you know, Susie Hedlund, recognized that from day one. She says, look, guys, all of these important programs are going to get funded, but what we're going to do and what President Trump's going to do is get these decisions back to the states, get this funding back to the states so it can actually go to the kids in the classroom and not this bureaucratic nonsense back in the swamp.
That's exactly right, and I hear a lot of that nonsense that you were just talking about all the time, but let me be clear that returning education to the state doesn't mean dismantling public schools. It doesn't mean ending federal support. And, you know, I think anyone claiming otherwise is defending the bloated bureaucracy that has failed our students for decades. What Secretary McMahon and President Trump are talking about is empowering families and giving students the freedom to learn in environments that suit them best. And, you know, the Department of Education right now functions merely as a funding pass-through for federal dollars. And, you know, it raises that important question again, why should it exist only to add red tape and hurdles to those dollars? And so I think Secretary McMahon and President Trump are just trying to empower families.
Yeah, when we've seen like the USAID scandal and how our own taxpayer dollars were used against us, or how grifters were basically stealing our own taxpayer dollars, I'll bet you guys are, as you turn over some of the rocks at the Department of Education, you've exposed kind of similar grift there as well that you're working to clean up.
Absolutely. It's a work in progress. But I think there is no one better than Secretary McMahon to lead this charge.
Yeah, well, and then one more thing, and then I know you got to run. It's great to have Savannah Newhouse with us, Press Secretary for Secretary of Education, Linda McMahon, here on the program with us. Yeah, she was just in Montana last week. You talked about this national school report card, and we're going to do a deep dive into that later this week with some Montana guests as well. But let's just compare Mississippi to Minnesota. I don't know if you saw these billboards up in Minnesota, but they were basically saying, hey, Minnesota nice, but Mississippi smarter. Mississippi spends way less money on public education, and yet they're kicking Minnesota's butt right now.
That's right. We were just in Mississippi a few weeks ago, in Mississippi and Tennessee, where they are really getting back to the fundamentals of reading, back to phonics learning, the science of reading. And we have seen success in how getting back to the basics, more children are mastering those literacy fundamentals early on. And look, we know every state's going to do things a little bit differently, not one size fits all, but you know, I think we can agree, no matter what side of the aisle you're on or what your politics are, that our students deserve better than what we're giving them now. And if we're going to remain globally competitive, our third and eighth graders have to be reading better than 30% proficiency, and that's where we all need to find common ground.
Savannah Newhouse, thanks for what you're doing for America. Thanks for joining us on Montana Talks. Great to have you.
Thank you.
All right. Phone lines are open for you, 406-294-0970. Caden, if my message didn't go through to you, yeah, definitely go ahead and send down our next caller. I think we've got Joe in Livingston on the phone lines there. So, Caden, go ahead and patch Joe through to us, and we'll get Joe on the air. Oh, there he is right there. Looks like it. Okay, Joe in Livingston listening to KPRK. Joe, what's on your mind? Thanks for the call.
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Yeah, Aaron, you know, I was trying to refresh my memory about where things were at with that federal judge, Brian Morris, who put a pause on the law that stopped drag queens from reading to little kids. And, you know, I was just trying to refresh my memory. Time goes on, and we're not quite sure where things are at. I know I've called the Attorney General's office to ask for an update and the governor's office, and I just think it's an important subject, and I think it's kind of fallen to the wayside.
Yeah, because we remember these drag queen story hours. They were showing up, targeting little kids in classrooms, and dressed very inappropriate. I mean, a woman wouldn't even show up in a classroom and read a book to kids like that, much less a man dressed like a woman, right?
But of course. I mean, it's real simple. We don't do sex stuff around kids, heterosexual or otherwise. We just don't do it. It's inappropriate, period. And I've, you know, voiced my opinion to our county commissioners in Livingston when they decided to have their drag queen events out at the county fairground, which, by the way, they decided needed a whole bunch of security. So we paid for all of those police and all of that overtime and for the Livingston and the county sheriff to be out there. The commissioners, one of the commissioners was asked how much that cost us. We've never heard back. I know if I have a private event for whatever it is, I'm not getting private security if there's some type of elevated threat, so there's that as well. Yeah, just wondering where. All I know is that the federal judge still has a pause on, you know, Montanans being able to get what they asked for and what the governor gave us.
Yeah, you know, interesting. Good question. Yeah, you know, it's interesting you bring that topic up because you don't hear about these drag queen story hour events targeting kids in classrooms like we used to. And I wonder if that's a byproduct of the success of the Trump administration because, you know, for example, the executive order to protect, you know, girls' sports in women's sports and to protect privacy in bathrooms so that men can't be going into girls' locker rooms, men can't be going into girls' bathrooms. And as Jeff Lasloffy with the Montana Family Foundation pointed out when he joined us on the show, I think this was last week, he said, hey, if you hear of this happening in Montana schools, because he's heard that in some cases they're still trying to do this or allow this, hey, tell your school, tell your administrator, guys, don't be bullied by these left-wing extremists into allowing men into girls' bathrooms. Show them this letter, and they've got the letter on the Montana Family Foundation website. Show them this letter that says they will lose their federal funding if they are taking away the privacy for these little girls. So it's on the Montana Family Foundation website. Joe, thanks for the call.
When we...
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, Joe in Livingston mentioned federal district court judge Brian Morris, and that kind of reminded me, I swore I saw a news story. Yet another one here from one of these left-wing federal judges going after our farmers and ranchers. You saw this Judge DeSoto issue a ruling against ranchers in the Paradise Valley. Of course, she has no problem with the big money liberals building millionaire mansions in the Paradise Valley, but she'll rule against the ranchers in the Paradise Valley. Same thing with Judge Don Malloy, the left-wing federal judge out of Missoula who killed the timber industry in western Montana. Yeah, he has no problem with the big money liberals building mansions in the Paradise Valley, but he rules against the ranchers of the Paradise Valley. This message came from Walt in Libby, came in on our Montana Talks app. Judge grants restraining order against the Grant Coors Ranch ditch. He says, liberal activist judge Brian Morris at it again. Take in water since 1862, but the judge knows better. He calls it ridiculous. Yeah, a federal judge ordered irrigators to temporarily shut off a ditch below Deer Lodge because apparently they claim that it's potentially causing harm to the bull trout in the upper Clark Fork River, because the judge is a scientist. So, of course, the judge knows what's best. Again, this is just another liberal federal judge attacking farmers and ranchers, which has been a repeated trend from these left-wing federal judges, which is why it's so great that President Trump now has two openings on the federal bench that he's able to appoint. You've got Representative Bill Mercer, a state Republican representative out of Billings, former U.S. attorney, who's already been nominated to one of the seats in Missoula, and then he's got an opening on a seat in Billings as well. That's really going to be the game changer. And it's also a reminder of how important these Montana Supreme Court elections are coming up next year as well, and why folks have got to do everything they can, in my opinion, to get Judge Dan Wilson across the finish line over this radical far-left environmental extremist Judge Amy Eddy, who is a soft-on-criminal judge, as we've heard before. All right, phone lines are open. If you call right now, I should be able to sneak you on before we run out of time. 406-294-0970. Let's go next to Frank in Evergreen. Frank, what's on your mind this morning?
Oh, back to the original Constitution of our guaranteed freedoms and liberties. One that's not mentioned is the freedom of thought. And when King George was in his reign, only he had that right. And even in France, you could not have your own freedom to think. To imagine, and one of the crimes in that time was to imagine the death of a king would be an offense of death. And, you know, we should have added to that the Constitution. You know, and free thought is believed to be actually a thought crime here in the United States now. It's because autistic free thinkers, very notable free thinkers such as that had this autism was Albert Einstein, you know, and back in also history, Isaac Newton, Nikola Tesla, Charles Darwin. Anybody that questions authority.
And isn't it interesting that the very people who want to defend the incitement of violence coming from the radical left, the very people that defend those who celebrate the assassination, the terrorist political assassination that took place on our soil, but yet they don't want to defend your right to the freedom of speech. They were the first ones to jump up and down and celebrate when big tech was silencing and censoring Americans at the behest of the Joe Biden regime. In fact, I don't know if you guys heard this, but big news regarding Google. You know, Google was interfering in our political elections. Google was suppressing your free speech if you came from a certain side of the political aisle. This was big news that just came out. Jim Jordan had this to say, and I think you've got a reaction here from Bill Hemmer on Fox News as well. But Congressman Jim Jordan, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, here's what he had to say.
The Biden administration pressured all these platforms to censor. They, in fact, did it. You felt it firsthand. We suspected Google was no different than Twitter and Facebook. And, of course, we were right. They admitted that this was going on. They pledged to reinstate anyone who was kicked off. This is a big win for the First Amendment today and a big win for people's liberty.
So Jim Jordan there talking with Sean last night in a letter from Google. Here we go now. Vowing to bring back YouTube accounts that had been banned for political speech. In a letter, it admits that the Biden administration pressured Google to remove content even when it did not violate YouTube's policies.
Yeah, and that was, of course, just one way they systematically went after our First Amendment rights all across the country due to pressure from the Biden regime. Jonathan Turley, constitutional lawyer, also weighed in.
And I write about this in The Indispensable Right, that you had this coordination between the government, corporations, academia, even the media, to censor people with opposing views. And it came at a great cost, not just a free speech. But in COVID, we never had the debate that other countries had. Many of our allies did not shut down their schools, and they have not experienced the psychological and developmental problems that we have.
All right, there you go. Ties into our first topic this hour about the topic of education. Oh, they tried to silence us. They tried to silence this show as well. We will not be silenced. And we'll keep taking your calls. Finding